Blog Talk Radio.
Deepest condolences to those so terribly injured in this terrorist attack, and to the many killed and the families, so many families of the victims. We stand in absolute solidarity with the people of the United Kingdom. So many young, beautiful, innocent people living and enjoying their lives murdered by evil losers in life. I won't call them monsters because they would like that term. They would think that's a great name. I will call them from now on losers because that's what they are. They're losers. And we'll have more of them, but they're losers. Just remember that. This is what I've spent these last few days talking about during my trip overseas. Our society can have no tolerance for this continuation of bloodshed. We cannot stand a moment longer for the slaughter of innocent people. And in today's attack, it was mostly innocent children. The terrorists and extremists and those who give them aid and comfort must be driven out from our society forever. This wicked ideology must be obliterated, and I mean completely obliterated, and the innocent life must be protected, all innocent lives. Life must be protected.
That is President Trump on Monday in Israel making these very profound, bold remarks in light of the tragedy and the nightmare in Manchester. Good morning and welcome to the Cross in the Desert. Today, speaking hope and freedom to Manchester. I'm your host, Randy L. Noble, so glad that you took out time from your busy life to spend it this morning with me on the cross in the desert. The feeling and the mood of almost every one of us is outrage. I remember having dinner with my wife, Becky. We were at Chili's when we first heard about these attacks. And it was a somber moment. I said to Becky, here we go again. And then I thought this had only been a couple of days, maybe even less than a day and a half, since President Trump was in Saudi Arabia vowing with the Sunni world and asking them to help him join in the fight of obliterating and driving out this evil. These were bold, courageous statements, and then this. And I couldn't help to think for a moment, they are on the run. They know their time is limited. They know that this administration will not tolerate this evil. And they know, as I mentioned, their time is short. As a society, we are outraged, but particularly in this case, with young, beautiful, innocent children, girls, mainly girls and boys, at an Ariana Grande concert in Manchester. It shouldn't shock and surprise us. Look at what ISIS does with young children. They sell them into sexual slavery. It shouldn't shock and surprise us. They have an agenda to destroy this generation of children. And it shouldn't shock and surprise us that at an Ariana Grande conference, or concert, I should say, where the message in the music is empowering to women, especially women, it shouldn't shock and surprise us that this is where they would attack next. The radical, evil losers, as our president aptly said, have no regard for women. And it shouldn't surprise us. It should make us outraged, but it doesn't surprise us they would attack young, beautiful children like Safi Rose, Chris Upton, her teacher at Tarleton Community Primary School, said Safi was simply a beautiful little girl in every aspect of the word. She was loved by everyone, and her warmth and kindness will be remembered fondly. Safi was quiet and unassuming with a creative flair. And then, of course, there's Olivia Campbell, a 15-year-old girl who attended a concert with her friend on Monday night. Rest in peace, my precious darling. Olivia was a darling, precious, gorgeous girl, taken far, far too soon to go sing with the angels. 18-year-old superfan, we call her, Georgina Calander, also killed in the attack. She had tweeted at the pop store the day before the concert. She said, so excited to see you tomorrow. Georgina was a lovely young student who was very popular with her peers and staff and always made the most of the opportunity she had at school. Actually, she had met the artist Ariana Grande back in 2015. Now, let me just pause and say something about Ariana. Obviously, she is very anti Trump, very pro-Islam and open borders. I will only say this about that. Regardless of my differences with her and maybe her message in many ways, she is an artist that is free to speak and to sing about what she did and what she believes in. She has that right. And I support that right. And those that go to her concerts have absolutely every right. They don't have to bow to my opinion or my views of her. The point is, these young girls were enjoying and loving life to the fullest. They were excited. the message was empowering to them as women. And this is when terror struck. It is absolutely unacceptable, and we should be outraged. And I want you to hear right now from someone, she actually is a friend of ours and an inner circle of friends, very successful talk show, radio host, and author. I want you to hear from Blaze TV right now, Dana Lesh, as she comments about the atrocities at Manchester. Let's listen.
Try as they might, the terrorist dogs couldn't snuff out all of the light in the world last night. And it's this light that leads the way forward. Western society faces a choice of two futures. Do we cower to a zealously religious ideology that demands subjugation without compromise, an ideology that thinks nothing of murdering and maiming our girls, an ideology that demands we perform ridiculous Olympic feats of denial and deny our own well-being? Or do we choose to drop all pretense, leave aside political correctness, and refuse to be enslaved by the indulgence of our own misplaced compassion? Some hearts and minds can be changed, but these dogs are beyond the reaches of love, reason, or logic. There is no diplomacy with anyone who celebrates tearing apart young girls with ball bearings, nails, and screws. Such people must be exterminated from the face of the earth in such a fashion that people a millennia later will tell stories about the brutality that awaits such brutes. A God that calls for the murder of girls is a weak, impotent God. Make these barbarians fear the wrath of the West. We didn't start this war, but we should end it and can. A society that cannot protect its children is a doomed society. Homeland Security says that over 740,000 foreigners overstayed their visas last year. UK Intel reports that over 3,500 potential terrorists, 400 ISIS fighters, have returned back to the UK from Syria. The OSU terrorist stabber was a Somali refugee. The Minnesota mall terrorist was a Somali refugee. The Stockholm truck terrorist was an asylum seeker from Uzbekistan. The attempted attack in Austria this year was carried out by a migrant. The Antwerp terrorist attack in March was carried out by a Tunisian migrant. The Paris and Belgian terrorists were allowed to travel and escape freely between European nations due to the EU's policy of open borders. In 2017, terror attacks have been carried out every 9 or so days. And for the people who believe it's bigoted to discuss border security, who view borders as walls rather than bottlenecks to slow the flow of entry, to better ascertain who is entering, take your locks off your doors. Take your little alarm signs out of your front yards and the stickers off your windows. Remove the fences around your yards. Remove the locks and alarms from your cars. Don't be hypocritical racist bigots with an obsession on keeping people out. For those who have placed popularity with terror groups ahead of the security of your own citizens, look at the face of 8-year-old Safi Rose Roussos and ask yourself if it was worth it. Little girls are picking teeth and skin out of their hair today. Was it worth it? Women live in fear. Is it worth it? For you feminists who fly into a rage whenever you don't get your abortion on demand or your free birth control pills, who are so quick to show up for cameras in your knitted pink hats with your "she persisted" slogans, where are you for the Rotherham girls? The systemic community-wide abuse of hundreds of young girls by Arab migrants that the leaders in law enforcement covered up because they were more afraid of being called bigots than rape enablers. Where is your hashtag rape culture then? Where was it? Where's your pink hat, "she persisted" girl power for Safi Roussos? Why are you always absent from the real fights and there when it doesn't matter? Where are the moderates of Islam? Why do we hear from so few of them? Why are so many afraid to ask this question? Zudi Jasser said that the revolution must come from inside Islam, but are there enough who want it to make it happen? Dalton and Roadhouse said it best. It's time to not be nice. It's time to stop perpetuating terrorism with the indulgence of political correctness. It's time to stop treating a violent, sexist ideology as if it is in any way at all compatible with the modern era. Unless you want your children taking up a fight that you yourself lack the courage to finish, buck up, speak out, and get not nice.
That is Dana Lesh from the Blaze TV, not mincing any words, but saying it like it is. And I agree with everything that she has just said. It is time to stop being nice. No more Mr. Nice Guys. One thing these terrorists will not do is take away our lives. They will not keep us in prisons of fear. They will not shut down our lives that we retreat like ostriches in the sand. They will not take away our freedom. They will not take away our rights. They will not take away our children. Folks, it's time to get tough. As Dana pointed out, the inconsistencies of the liberal left, why aren't they showing up in outrage against these girls in Manchester that lost their lives? Where is their voice for them? All they know how to do is bash our president because he calls them evil losers. But they have no voice and no backbone to show up when the rubber meets the road. When children are involved, folks, young children at a concert of their choice, folks, it is time to speak out and to not be Mr. Nice Guy anymore, to stop letting multiculturalism, as rampant as it is in the UK, open borders, as rampant as it is in the UK and Germany. We need to take a tough stand and to say without shame or regret, this is closed down because we care about the lives of our people, and stop catering to political correctness and giving in to what they say. I don't care what they say anymore. We are going to do what we need to do to protect our young children. One thing I will say about Ariana Grande's manager who reacted to this, he had several tweets about they will not stop my joy, they will not take away my freedom, etc. I agree with that. That's the first thing they want to do, is to put us in a cage of fear. That being said, these are human emotions, from Dana Lesh to myself and others. But we as Christians, what do we take away from this? Do we become self-appointed vigilantes and just go out and kill them? No, we leave that duty to our Homeland Security, to our law enforcement, to our military. What I want to talk about this morning, very importantly, in the sea of emotions and outrage that we have, what does God's word say to us in this situation? How are we to react to this terror? This psalm that I'm about to read, and it's lengthy, says something to our heart and spirit as an admonition from the psalmist, giving us the heart of God about what we are to do in reaction to the terrorism in our world. This is a bit of a lengthy psalm, but I want you to hear what our attitude should be in light of all of these terrorist attacks that we hear about in the news almost every day. Psalm 37, God's admonition to us. Don't worry about the wicked, or envy those who do wrong, for like grass, they soon fade away. Like spring flowers, they soon wither. Trust in the Lord and do good. Then you will live safely in the land and prosper. Take delight in the Lord, and he will give you your heart's desires. Commit everything you do to the Lord. Trust him, and he will help you. He will make your innocence radiate like the dawn, and the justice of your cause will shine like the noonday sun. Be still in the presence of the Lord and wait patiently for him to act. Don't worry about evil people who prosper or fret about their wicked schemes. Stop being angry. Turn from your rage. Do not lose your temper. It only leads to harm. For the wicked will be destroyed. But those who trust in the Lord will possess the land. Soon the wicked will disappear. Though you look for them, they will be gone. The lowly will possess the land and will live in peace and prosperity. The wicked plot against the godly. They snarl at them in defiance, but the Lord just laughs, for he sees their day of judgment coming. The wicked draw their swords and string their bows to kill the poor and the oppressed, to slaughter those who do right, but their swords will stab their own hearts, and their bows will be broken. It is better to be godly and have little than to be evil and rich. For the strength of the wicked will be shattered, but the Lord takes care of the godly. Day by day, the Lord takes care of the innocent, and they will receive an inheritance that lasts forever. They will not be disgraced in hard times. Even in famine, they will have more than enough. But the wicked will die. The Lord's enemies are like flowers in a field. They will disappear like smoke. The wicked borrow, and they never repay. But the godly are generous givers. Those the Lord blesses will possess the land. But those he curses, they will die. The Lord directs the steps of the godly. He delights in every detail of their lives. For though they stumble, they will never fall, for the Lord holds them by the hand. Once I was young, and now I'm old, yet I have never seen the godly abandoned or their children begging for bread. The godly always gives generous loans to others, and their children are a blessing. Turn from evil and do good, and you will live in the land forever. For the Lord loves justice, and he will never abandon the godly. He will keep them safe forever, but the children of the wicked will die. The godly will possess the land and will live there forever. The godly offer good counsel. They teach right from wrong. They have made God's law their own, so they will never slip from his path. The wicked wait in ambush for the godly, looking for an excuse to kill them. But the Lord will not let the wicked succeed or let the godly be condemned when they are put on trial. Put your hope in the Lord. Travel steadily along his path. He will honor you by giving you the land. You will see the wicked destroyed. I have seen wicked and ruthless people flourishing like a tree in its native soil. But when I looked again, they were gone. Though I searched for them, I could not find them. Look at those who are honest and good, for a wonderful future awaits those who love peace. But the rebellious will be destroyed. They have no future. The Lord rescues the godly. He is their fortress in times of trouble. The Lord helps them, rescuing them from the wicked. He saves them, and they will find shelter in him. This psalm needs no commentary, really. It is a promise from God, an exhortation that the wicked will soon fade away. Like spring flowers, they soon will wither. It tells us in the sense and in the culture of fear and terrorism, trust in the Lord. He will be your refuge. He will give you justice. He will give you the land. Take delight in him. He will give you the desires of your heart. This is the admonition of God in this culture of fear that we live in. I want to take just a few minutes here as I dedicate my program today to these innocent victims in the UK. I have a song for you, a song of hope in the midst of grief and pain. And it's a song that has great meaning. I'm talking about the song, It Is Well With My Soul. I want to read to you the story behind this song, and then I want you to hear it. Horatio G. Spafford was a successful lawyer and businessman in Chicago with a lovely family, a wife, Anna, and five children. And they were not strangers to tears and tragedy. Their young son died in 1871 from pneumonia. And in that same year, much of their business was lost in the Great Chicago Fire. On November 21st, 1873, the French ocean liner Villa du Havre was crossing the Atlantic from the United States to Europe with 313 passengers on board. Now, among the passengers on that ocean liner were Mrs. Spafford and their four daughters. Although Mr. Spafford had planned to go with his family, he found it necessary to stay behind in Chicago to help solve an unexpected business problem. He told his wife he would join her and their children in Europe a few days later. His plan was to take another ship. About 4 days into the crossing of the Atlantic, the Villa de Harve collided with a powerful iron-hulled Scottish ship, the Loch Earn. Suddenly, all of those on board were in grave danger. Anna hurriedly brought her four children to the deck. She knelt there with Anna, Margaret Lee, Bessie, and Tanata, and prayed that God would spare them if that could be his will, or to make them willing to endure whatever awaited them. Within approximately 12 minutes, the Villa de Harve slipped beneath the dark waters of the Atlantic, carrying with it 226 of the passengers, including the four Spafford children. A sailor rowing a small boat over the spot where the ship went down spotted a woman floating on a piece of the wreckage. It was Anna. She was still alive. He pulled her into the boat, and they were picked up by another large vessel, which 9 days later landed them in Cardiff, Wales. From there, she wired her husband a message which began, quote, "Saved alone. What shall I do?" Mr. Spafford later framed the telegram, placed it in his office. Another of the ship's survivors, Pastor Weiss, later recalled Anna saying, "God gave me four daughters. Now they have been taken from me. Someday I will understand why." Mr. Spafford booked passage on the next available ship and left to join his grieving wife. With the ship about 4 days off, the captain called Spafford to his cabin and told him they were over the place where his children went down. According to Bertha Spafford Vester, a daughter born after the tragedy, Spafford wrote, "It is well with my soul while on the journey." I can't imagine the grief of the parents that have lost their daughters in this unspeakable tragedy this past Monday in Wales and in Manchester, excuse me. But this is a man who had suffered much in his business and with his child dying just recently from pneumonia. And now his four daughters are gone. And there he stands over the spot where they sank. And he wrote one of the most incredible church hymns ever penned. I want you to hear this, sung by the beautiful wife, the beautiful voice of Audrey Assad, "It Is Well With My Soul."
When peace like a river
to
My thoughts and prayers today with the family of Safi Rose Srusas, Olivia Campbell, Georgina Callender, the many others senselessly murdered, and also those that were seriously injured. I want to take us now to the second half of the program today. It is a very special live reading as I continue reading my new book, Finding Hope and a Future, Maral's Journey to Freedom. This is part six, and this is the music for the book. Please enjoy this, and when it's finished, I will begin reading chapter five. This is a live reading of Finding Hope and a Future, Maral's Journey to Freedom. We're beginning Chapter 5 today, Crossing the Zagros Mountains, Saturday, October 17th, 2015. Maral and Parham both stood shivering next to Muhammad's car on a cold autumn Saturday night. Parham was bundled up in a gray sweatshirt, dark jeans, and a yellow jacket, while Maral was wearing a blue pullover sweater, faded jeans, and a gray coat. They were prepared for the long, cold, grueling mountain climb that awaited them in just a few hours after daybreak. Muhammad had arranged for Maral and Parham to meet some friends of his that would take them to the Koy at the border of Turkey. The secret meeting would be taking place in just a few minutes in Mallet Park, where they had just parked their car. It had been a very long 7-hour drive from Abade to Mallet Park in Tehran, a distance of more than 610 kilometers or 410 miles. Mallet Park was home to many famous sculptures and statues of Iranian poets. Muhammad had arranged for Maral to meet her contact near one of the sculptures. Muhammad and Ismail exited the car and stood across from Maral and Parham. Maral rushed into Muhammad's arms with tears-soaked eyes. She realized it may be a very long time before she saw her brother again. Muhammad held his sister tight and then scooped up Parham into his arms. You take care of your mother, Muhammad instructed Parham. Rubbing his black hair affectionately, Parham shook his head in agreement. He had been very quiet the entire trip, still trying to emotionally process everything that was happening. Esmail and Maral tightly hugged each other. Don't be afraid. God is with you, Esmail encouraged his sister. I will miss you both so much, Maral said, bursting into tears. Muhammad composed himself and wiped the tears from his eyes, and then stared intently into Maral's brown eyes. Now, you will meet a tall man at the Haves sculpture. He will be dressed in a gray raincoat with a brown sock hat and wearing glasses. He will then give you instructions, and you must follow them completely, Muhammad instructed Maral. Maral nodded her head. Muhammad glanced down at his watch. It was 8:30 p.m. You must both get going. Muhammad hugged Maral for the last time and then rubbed the palm of his hand over Parham's hair. Maral quickly Parham's hand, and they both began walking down the concrete pathway that was dimly lighted from the tall street lamps. Maral stopped and looked back at her brothers. They were both waving goodbye. She quickly blew them a kiss and then continued walking. Maral and Parham arrived at the sculpture of Haves that was located in front of the beautifully lighted fountains in the center of the park. She gazed up at the full moon shrouded behind the thick clouds in the night sky. It was eerily quiet with no one else around, and Maral was shaking from fear. She did her best to not upset Parham, but was becoming difficult to hide it from him. Mother, who are we going to meet? Parham inquired, rubbing his eyes. I'm tired and thirsty. Shh, Maral said, interrupting Parham and touching his lips with her fingers. We must be quiet. We have to wait. Maral put her arms around Parham, shivering and trying to keep warm for the both of them on a very chilly night. Suddenly, from out of the darkness emerged a tall man, dressed in the exact way that Muhammad had described him. With both of his hands in his pockets, he slowly walked up to Maral and Parham. Maral grabbed Parham and froze in fear. Are you Maral? The man asked, looking over his shoulder, making sure there was no one else around. Yes, Maral nervously answered. The man breathed a sigh of relief and then drew closer to Maral. As soon as I leave you, you are to wait here 5 minutes and then go to the, and there you will be met by another contact driving a black Peugeot car. Maral took a deep, nervous breath and nodded her head in agreement. The man tipped his brown cap toward Maral and then disappeared back into the night. Both Maral and Parham waited patiently at the rear entrance of the park. The night air was becoming chillier, and Parham had almost reached the limit of his patience. Looking down at her cell phone, Maral took note of the time. It was now 9:15 p.m. They had been waiting for more than a half hour. Mom, I'm cold. When are these people going to come? Parham asked with a frustrated tone in his voice. Maral took an angry deep breath. We just have to be patient. Suddenly, a beam of light flashed across the tree limbs, startling Maral. Then a few moments later, she heard the sound of a car door closing. Out of the darkness emerged a tall, thin man with a dark gray beard. Parham grabbed onto his mother's arm in fear. Are you Maral? The man asked. Yes, Maral nervously answered. The tall man drew closer and motioned with his hand. Please hurry and come this way. Maral and Parham quickly followed the man back down the sidewalk and out the back entrance of the park. When they emerged from some trees, Maral saw a black Peugeot car that looked just like hers parked against the curb with the engine still running. The tall man opened up the passenger door. Maral let Parham go in first, and she followed, sitting next to him in the back seat. The driver turned around in his seat and greeted Maral. He was an older, bald-headed man wearing silver-rimmed glasses. My name is Hadi, and this is my friend Amir. I'm Maral, and this is my son Parham. Maral replied, putting her arm around her son. We have a very long drive ahead of us, and we must get going right away. I'm going to take us to the city of Koy at the border of Turkey. It is a long 400-mile drive, and it will take us more than 7 hours. Maral took a deep breath and rolled her eyes in frustration. She had spent most of the day riding in the car from Abadi to Tehran. She was exhausted but very anxious to get started on the journey of her life. When we arrive at Koy, I will leave you with a group of Afghan refugees, and you will be informed what to do next. Hadi put the car in gear, and they quickly sped away. Parham leaned his head against Maral's shoulder. Maral gently kissed Parham on his forehead. Why don't you try and get some sleep, my son? I promise to awake you as soon as we arrive. Parham snuggled tightly up against his mother. Maral leaned back in the seat and pulled out her cell phone. She logged onto Facebook and began looking at her file folder of photographs. Gazing at the pictures of her sister, Farzane and Farinak, tears began to well up in Maral's eyes. She wondered if she would ever see them again. The pictures of their last Nowruz celebration put a sparkle in Maral's tired, tear-soaked eyes. She began to chuckle at the pictures of her mom and dad serving the special meal that started the Nowruz celebration. She remembered how delicious the sabzi polo tasted that year. The fish seemed to melt in her mouth with every bite along with the tasty herbs. Maral closed her eyes. She could see the celebration as if it were just yesterday. That day, on March 20th, Maral remembered praying for a miracle in her life. She was tormented by the thoughts that her father-in-law might try to take Parham from her simply because she refused to be a practicing Muslim. From the day they had met, Maral could sense his displeasure with her. He criticized her for not being a good Muslim woman and refusing to raise Parham according to the Islamic faith. Maral opened her eyes back up and squeezed Parham tighter. Parham was already fast asleep. She gently kissed him on the forehead again. "No one will ever take you from me, Parham," Maral confidently boasted. Leaning back against the seat, Maral turned off her cell phone and closed her eyes. She needed strength for the very difficult day ahead of her. Maral was awakened from sleep by a slight nudge at the car as it halted to a stop. It was still the dead of night. "It's 3:30 a.m. We have arrived at Koy," Hadi announced. The city of Koy is located right at the border of Turkey. Turkey has been a welcome haven and refuge for Iranians fleeing persecution from the evil regime. Here in Turkey, many Iranians, under the threat of arrest and imprisonment, struggled to survive, waiting for an interview with the UNHCR refugee program in hopes of being transferred to a new homeland away from the dictatorship of the Ayatollah. It was an extremely difficult and emotional choice for many Iranians to leave their home for many years and travel around the world in search of freedom. Separated from their families and loved ones was not an easy decision, but a necessary one in order to prevent suffering and death in the dirty prison systems. Recently, however, being a refugee in Turkey was becoming more dangerous. Turkish President Erdogan was busy implementing more societal restrictions and changing the laws to reflect a more fundamentalist Islamic culture. Iranians now fear that the only country of refuge would soon be taken away from them and leave them in a desperate situation for immigration. Maral nudged Parham. He slowly opened his eyes and began to stretch. "We have arrived, Parham. You have to wake up. We must leave," Maral said. The night air was frigid and very cold. The car had parked at the curb a few hundred yards from a village at the foot of the mountains. Hadi and Amir escorted Maral and Parham across the vacant field until they could see a small fire burning in the distance. "You see over there," Hadi said, pointing with his finger. "There is a small camp of refugees. Take Parham and go to the camp. A guide will come for you both in a few hours to begin the trek across the mountain." "Thank you, kind sir, for all you have done to help us," Maral said with gratitude, shaking hands with Hadi. "My pleasure," Hadi replied, and then quickly departed with Amir back to their car. As Maral drew closer, she could see a woman holding her crying child in her arms, sitting closer to the fire. A small group of men and women were huddled together, trying to survive in the cold night, warmed by a small fire in the center of their circle. Moral counted about 40 men and women. Most of them were Afghan in origin. Taking off their backpacks, Moral and Parham found an empty spot a few feet away from the fire to sit down. Two men gazed at her as she sat down without saying a word. It seemed as if it was too cold to be cordial and talk. Before leaving Abade, Moral had gathered together as many clothes as she could find, including bath towels, bottled water, shampoo, and a few plastic bags for bread and snacks. It would have to be enough to survive the grueling journey. Moral had expected more Iranians, but this small group was comprised mostly of Afghans. Afghans were used, abused, and hated by the Iranian regime. They manipulated their desperate situation for their own political purposes by recruiting them to fight for Bashar Assad, the Syrian dictator. The Afghan fighters were often impoverished, religiously devout, and ostracized from society, looking for money, social acceptance, and a sense of purpose that they were unable to find at home. The Iranian government understood their precarious situation and found it very easy to recruit them for the war in Syria. In return from fighting, Afghans were offered a residence permit in Iran and about a $500 a month salary. Moral bundled up against the extreme cold, struggling to keep warm in her gray jacket. Underneath the jacket, she was wearing a blue pullover sweater, hoping it would keep her warm once they began crossing the mountains. In the dark night, it was difficult to make out the size and shape of the mountain range. The Zagros Mountains extended across the borders of eastern Turkey, Iran, and northern Iraq, with a range of over 990 miles and more than 150 miles wide, with an elevation of 14,465 feet at one point. The elevation point that Moral and the other refugees would be crossing over would be at a height of 5,000 feet. Near the footholds of the mountain range, many Assyrian Christians made their homes along with the Kurds and Turks. Struggling to stay awake, Parham stretched out across his mother's leg and went back to sleep. Moral began warming her hands by the fire. She didn't know what to expect next. She was both tired and cold, but it would be difficult to go back to sleep with Parham lying across her leg. The warmth of the fire was beginning to relax Moral as she slowly closed her eye. Slowly her eyelids began to close. She ignored the rumbling feeling in her stomach from lack of food and instead tried to find a comfortable position to sleep in. Just as her eyes began closing, the nudge of a hand startled her. She looked up and saw the face of a short Iranian man holding out something in his hand. "Here is something to eat and drink," the man said. "You will need your strength for crossing the mountain very soon." Moral took a bottle of water and some biscuits from the man's hand and thanked him. The man identified himself as one of the guides of the camp. "The guides are taking 10 people at a time for a drive to the starting point of our crossing. Try to sleep. In 1 hour, it will be your turn." Moral took a quick gulp of water, leaving the rest for Parham, and then gobbled down the biscuit. She didn't know how long it would be before she ate again. I'm going to stop here. We are in the middle of Chapter 5 of Crossing the Zagros Mountains from my book, Finding Hope and a Future, Moral's Journey to Freedom. And on our next broadcast, we will resume Chapter 5 of my book. This book that was just recently published, in fact, on May 5th, is already getting a reading across the world. My good friend Allison finished reading it. It really warmed her heart. She said, one of the reasons I read it was not just because of the refugee story, but because of Moral's birthday. It's the same birthday as my birthday. And so she just felt that was a way to connect and identify with Moral. And since Moral has become a citizen, it's been about now, I would say almost a year, and things are really difficult there in Germany for her. And very soon, she's going to have to vacate her apartment. It's going to be very expensive for her to find a new one. Such is life in Germany. But I'm just praying that the Lord will provide everything that she will need financially. It is not an easy life in Germany. It's a very multicultural place, you know. And with what we have talked about this morning, about the attacks in Manchester and the death of these innocent girls, it frightened me and caused me to be afraid for my friend Moral, simply because. And I'm thankful that she has a new life in Germany. Don't misunderstand me. I'm thankful she's no longer under the bondage of living in Iran. I'm very thankful. But yet, Germany, Sweden, the UK are all countries with the open border policy. And I'm just hoping that in light of these attacks that the leader of these countries will take stronger, tougher measure against their within their policies about accepting migrants and refugees and being very, very tough on vetting them. This is very serious. In almost every one of these attacks, these have been either the families or the loved ones that are migrants that have supposedly assimilated to the culture, but in reality, they have gone off to Libya or Syria to get radicalized. And then they come back and perform these atrocious acts. And so there has to be, there must be a very tough vetting policy. And that's why I'm very proud of our President Trump. Although his executive order is still in the courts, in light of everything that you have witnessed along with me, can you now begin to understand the reason for this executive order? Can you begin to comprehend why it is absolutely necessary to overhaul our immigration system to make sure it's very strong and tough before we open up the door again? And yet, the liberals in our country, with their vested power in the courts, has found a way to temporarily stop it. And this should be a shame and a wake-up call. That liberals behaving according to political correctness are putting the lives of our families and loved ones in danger. I cannot imagine for a moment the grief of these families that have lost their children. And yet, in response, we talked about what God's word says, but here's what I say as well. We have got to take drastic measures to secure the safety of our countries. The President of the United States' number one responsibility is the safety and protection of the citizens of the United States. And we cannot afford to have an open border policy. This is the result of having the multicultural open door, open border policy. What will it take for things to change? My thoughts, prayers to all of the victims, families, and loved ones today in the UK. I want to thank you for joining me on this very special broadcast today. I hope and pray you have a safe weekend. Memorial Day is just around the corner where we honor our military all over the world. I will see you then next on the Cross in the Desert. Have a very safe and beautiful weekend, and God bless you.
When peace like a river attends.